You're listening to the Yale Founder Series, your source for inspiration and insights into the vast world of entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Nathaniel Johnson, and we interview founders, CEOs, and world changers to get a better grasp of what it truly means to be a founder. Taking preconceived ideas into mind-boggling realities. But there's so much more than a podcast, it's a community. We empower startups with law, accounting, consulting, and more. So tune in to the end of this episode. It's going to involve with our partners, resources, and YFS as a whole.
Dmitry Sirota is the CEO and co-founder of BigID, a data management platform that deals with data security, privacy, risk management, among other things. With its current valuation by Forbes at $1.25 billion, BigID is an innovative force within the data security industry, as it aims to integrate advanced machine learning technology and data intelligence with its tools to protect client data. In fact, CNBC lists BigID as one of the top 25 enterprise startups powering the economy. In this episode, we sit down with Dmitry and discuss his path to starting BigID, from his initial entrance into the tech space to the journey he took facing various obstacles to reach where he is today with BigID.
How you doing, Dmitry?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing well, yeah. Perfect. Let's get started. So kind of just touching upon the first thing, you know, coming into BigID, this kind of this whole platform with organizations using their data and their privacy. Did you kind of always see yourself in that space? I mean, especially kind of growing up back in the day where I don't think big data was as prevalent. Curious as, you know, growing up in high school and college, where you kind of set on that niche, or maybe just set on entrepreneurship in general?
Yeah, so you may be able to tell just by looking at me, but when I went to high school, there was no internet. So the last thing on my mind was security for the internet or privacy for the internet.
Yeah.
I did always want to be an entrepreneur. I thought I would get there. So I was intending to do some grad studies in physics, and I did some. I didn't finish my PhD, but the internet kind of just got going kind of mid-90s when I was finishing up my master's, and that's when I got the bug. So my completing school, a little bit like for you guys, AI is now just getting kind of a lot of attention, and it's just happening. Mm-hmm. Maybe for a class from 2 years ago, crypto was the thing. Unfortunate for them, but so I do think that, you know, I was animated by that, and so I set aside my studies and decided to go into technology. So this is going back, I guess, 95, 96, something in that range. And I actually started my first company, I think 3 years after that, in 98, 99, also in tech. But that was the sequence. So no, in high school, I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never really had a sense of in what industry. And like I said, technology, yes, there was Apple, yes, there was Microsoft, but it was a very small part of the economy. So it wasn't necessarily in technology. But again, things changed in the 90s.
Yeah. And okay, I mean, you're telling me that, you know, you started in the late 90s to develop your first company. So, I mean, just curious, since, you know, Sean and I are both college students, and I guess kind of our audience falls around the demographic. So kind of what were you focused on then? I mean, you're saying you always knew you're going to be an entrepreneur, to be innovating and building, but I mean, paint the picture of what it looked like at that time to be an entrepreneur in college, or at least have that mindset. What did that look like for you on a daily basis?
Yeah, so, you know, it was funny. Like, when I started my first company, I was 28, I guess. Mm-hmm. And back then, it wasn't like now. So today, I think a lot of your listeners are thinking about starting something. And it's pretty expected to see kids straight out of college, kids dropping out of college, start companies. You know, none of that is new. I think back then there was still kind of a belief that if you're going to be in the technology industry, you needed to be a hardcore engineer. So, and I was living up in Vancouver in Canada back then. And so there was this kind of mismatch. You know, I was wanting to start a company, but I think people kind of felt a little like you get in professions, right? If you get into law, if you get into accounting, consulting, there's an expectation that you put your time in, right? Mm-hmm. I think back then, certainly in Vancouver, it kind of felt early. I think today, pretty much anybody can start anything as soon as they want, right? I think if you can finish your degree, it's almost like amazing and incredible. So I think the world has changed. I will say that, like any, you know, half of being in business is really kind of identifying a need, right? What is the pain? And that doesn't really change, you know, obviously the specific pain changes, but that kind of observationality, right? This kind of a, you know, watching to understand where the market is, looking for pain points. That's true whatever era you're in, whether you're like 200 years ago making coaches or whatever they did 200 years ago, or today kind of looking at AI. And I do think that reading a lot, understanding kind of the zeitgeist, understanding where the world is and where the gaps are, I think is a key thing. And again, the specific gaps change from epoch or year to year, but that kind of ability to kind of keep your ears and eyes open is common to all generations.
Yeah, I think you're right. You even like you said, with the AI and where, you know, where do we head from here? You know, when we look at entrepreneurism, I'm really curious to know, like, what is your opinion on, you know, where we're headed? I guess in the economic sense, you know, some people are saying, you know, there's nothing else to be created. You know, will we get another Thomas Edison? No, because we've you know, done everything. But then, you know, with AI, you know, and things, big data being big, you know, causes of concerns in recent time, do you think quite the opposite is the case?
Look, every time somebody tries to predict the end of history, they've been wrong, right? History is long and we live kind of a very short period in it, but it does tend to repeat a minimum kind of echo. Look, Elon Musk is a great testament. Last week there was a book published on him from Isaacson, and you know, he is, you know, setting aside his political beliefs, which are not like mine, but look, you know, he's a pretty incredible story in the sense that he's built multiple companies in all very diverse areas. And you could argue whether he started, you know, Tesla or not, but nevertheless, he's done something pretty remarkable. And certainly from a pure kind of wealth standpoint, he's outdone Edison. And look, he's just one example, right? I think Bezos has done something incredible. And you could argue Amazon has been successful in very diverse and divergent businesses. So yes, it was all concentrated in one business, but he kind of, like, Amazon Web Services is nothing similar to where he started selling books online. And of course today he sells you kind of a multitude of things. He's got a bunch of devices and he's got this cloud business. And even, you know, Facebook, right? I know that it's fun to kind of make fun of them, but they're still relevant, maybe because of Instagram, maybe because of WhatsApp, which is still used. Like when I talk to people in other parts of the world that work with Big ID, we're all on WhatsApp. You know, I was in the Hamptons, I posted on Instagram. So it's still relevant, even though...
We'll leave a like. We'll leave a like after the episode.
Yeah, look, you know, maybe it's not TikTok, but I do think that... And look, they're just some examples. Even Ellison with Oracle, he's still a top 10 most successful in history kind of entrepreneur. So look, I think there's lots of room for newer ones. I think for older ones, I think what's the most important part is just really understanding what the opportunity is and being attuned, being able to kind of speak those terms, whether it's AI or whether it's crypto or whether it's whatever the next flavor is. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about America, I actually just became an American citizen 2 months ago. There's lots of capital around, right? There's no shortage of money here to help entrepreneurs go do something. So I think that's what makes America kind of different and special.
Right. Different and special. Yeah. We definitely are that. I guess, Dimitri, another question I'd have for you is, where do you see Big ID kind of, you know, entering this new cloth that we're going to be in these next couple of decades,
So
you
look,
know,
you know,
role,
yeah,
whatever.
sure. So look, we started, this is my third company. We started formally in 2016. I think we started selling around 2018, so a little bit before COVID. We've grown to about 500 people. We started with a particular focus on data. You were talking about kind of big data, helping organizations understand where they have their kind of high risk, high value data, right? Where's the stuff that's going to kind of break the company? Where's the stuff that's going to kind of make you a hero? That's still relevant. Now, when we started, people were kind of a bit squeamish about understanding their data. They felt, oh, if I know my data, it's just going to cause heartache. I'll have compliance issues and so forth. I think the market has kind of evolved where now people almost realize data is kind of the currency of the digital enterprise. And post-COVID, so much like, look at us, like we're interacting over, I'm not sure what this is, Riverside, but it's like Zoom. But it's we're acting digital. And look, and I work from home a lot of times. I was in New York last week, but that's where I work from. And so I think, given the way we work, the way we collaborate, the way we invent, the way we sell, we're all kind of online, and more so than when I started back in the late 90s. And I think that need to kind of understand where the value and the risk is in the data to get, use the valuable stuff to kind of drive the business, and for the risky stuff, kind of make it go away, right? So the bad guys don't get it, or a bad employee doesn't get it. So I don't think that diminishes. I think that's going to grow in importance, and hopefully that'll mean Big ID will get bigger as time goes on.
And yeah, you kind of mentioned about this whole kind of blossom of innovation, right? I think, you know, saying how you started your first few companies up until then, that was the early 2000s, that was the dot-com bubble. So in talking about, right, you know, Facebook and talking about Elon Musk is doing, even the platform using right now to talk, you were in the midst of that, I guess, boom in that era where people were taking companies, you know, from starting them to going to IPO in about, what, 4 years. It was incredible. So I guess being in that era and I guess seeing the entrepreneurship blossom, I mean, was that kind of empowering? What was your
It is. Look, it's also a little bit sad that I'm not on a boat. Bezos got a nice Bezos, the Google guys, they got a giant boat. But look, it's a fantastic life, I will say. Not everyone I know has been able to, maybe get a house in Miami or whatever, but it's a great life because every day is different. I think there's opportunities. I enjoy working with prospects and customers. I enjoy working with employees. We have employees in Brazil and Mexico and India and Singapore and in Eastern Europe and in France. And look, it's possible to do something incredible in a very short amount of time. Not every company becomes Facebook. Very few do. But again, it's incredible that it's possible, right? It's possible for somebody that dropped out of school to become Facebook or the Microsoft CEO, former founder who dropped out of Harvard. And that means that, for all of us, now obviously you guys are going to an elite school, but whether you're an elite school or you're not, I think those possibilities exist. And there will be new problems compounding on new problems. And I don't know, maybe the future will be all about materials. Maybe it'll continue to be about AI. Maybe there'll be some other kinds of neural devices that let us telepathically communicate. I think there's always going to be a pivot, an inflection point in the industry that creates a swell of opportunity for entrepreneurs like the folks that are listening to this call and yourselves.
I mean, where we're at currently, I mean, that really speaks volumes. And I would suppose, you know, for everyone listening, I guess a great question to ask would be like, when it comes to that, you know, kind of risk versus reward that you kind of talk about, especially as a young founder, you know, you go into one of the best schools in the world, but you've got this idea that you think might be better, you know, like how do you gauge, you know, is the risk, you know, worth it or is it not? You know, who would your
Yeah,
advice be?
look, you're obviously talking to somebody who's biased. I think so. What the hell do you have to lose, right? What, you get a mortgage? Like, what, you have like a
It's funny you say that because some kids will
kid?
be like, what do you mean? Everything to lose, you know?
When
In
you're
a sense, some
young,
kids, this is all they ever wanted. And so it's almost like everything to lose, you know?
yeah, look, I think, look, for some people, entrepreneurship is not for everybody. It's difficult. And my first company was not a success. So that was, you could argue, kind of 5 years of painful kind of toiling without any kind of economic benefit. So it doesn't always end up in a result that you want. But it's a fantastic experience. Now, look, having said that, I think working for Goldman is a fantastic experience. I think working for McKinsey is a fantastic experience. There's no one way to get kind of what you want out of life. I think entrepreneurship is very, very broad, right? And also, you could enter it at any point. You could enter it after your first year. You could enter it in high school. You could enter it 10 years after you've been working. So I don't think necessarily everybody has to go into it. I think that it's very possible to become the CEO of Disney and get paid oodles of money and live a very fulfilling life. I think what's different probably over the last 25 years is that there is an ability to start a company. And if you look at kind of like the top 20 high net worth people, they tend to come from almost like three areas: real estate, banking, finance, like, they own a hedge fund or something in that, or tech, right? Or startups, like they have some kind of entrepreneurial experience. Not to say that somebody has to aspire to be, you could live a very comfortable and satisfying life without being in the Forbes 400. But it's interesting and it's exciting, and the possibility is there, and knowing the possibility is there and it's available, it's open to kind of more and more people in the US, but also outside of the US, in Europe and in Asia. Look, it's an exciting way to live. It's certainly by far not the only way to live. There's lots of ways to have a fulfilling life, including inheriting money if that's your thing.
Yeah, no, of course. And then it's funny you mentioned even the pipelines too, right? Goldman, McKinsey, and oftentimes that's looked at a place to maybe gain industry experience before jumping into entrepreneurship or discovering that love for and passion for innovating later. So curious. I mean, we even did an episode where we asked 60 Yale students if entrepreneurs are born or made, just given that we were curious if it was a innate thing and an innate kind of passion to always be building, and that would kind of happen whenever the opportunity came, or more a thing that blossomed in later years after being in the industry and gaining more experience. So curious on your take is that as well. Do you think that, students who are leaning towards these industry jobs and maybe looking for experience first are people that don't inherently have that drive to innovate, or does someone who always wants to be an entrepreneur will always chase that opportunity and create that opportunity? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I don't know. So look, my family were immigrants from the Soviet Union, not educated, neither had gone to school. They had a small business, a jewelry store that I worked at from the time I was a kid. So I was, and look, it was a hard life. We weren't rich or anything of that sort, but it was kind of the life I knew. Now, I did go to school and study physics and math and the graduate studies and that, but I kind of enjoyed, to some degree, that unpredictability, right? And the possibility, right, that you could change your outcomes and your status, and it was within your control. You didn't have to rely on somebody above you to promote you, and that suited me. Early in life, I was probably a lot more introverted, as people who tend to go to physics are. I would say today I'm much more extroverted. I like talking to customers. I like being in sales. I like the marketing aspect. That is not the way I was, even when I was your age. I was much more. But having said that, you look at tech as an example of entrepreneurship. There's all kinds, right? I think a lot of the people are borderline autistic. Like they're not. They have a hard time holding a conversation in many cases, and yet they've done phenomenally well. And so I really do think that there is no one path for anyone. And I do think people could pursue kind of a staggered path. Maybe they go and work, build up some, build up their kind of career and experiences, and maybe along the way they find an opportunity they want to kind of serve at. And some people, I think there used to be this kind of book around finding your true north. And I think the true north for somebody is very different. I personally want it to be something kind of out there. Like I said, I enjoy kind of selling and doing that, which is not the way I was maybe earlier in life, but certainly is the way I am today. And I think what I do kind of suits me and suits that type of job. I think other folks are much more operationally focused. Some folks are much more, you know, financial whizzes. Some like to cut up bodies and dissect them and become doctors. So I think there's no one path, but certainly I think what makes, I think, today different is that entrepreneurship is like a legitimate career path, right? You could, and again, it spans many, 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 it's not just technology. It could be clothing, could be music, could be other things, could be sports and whatnot, could be real estate. But I do think that there's more and more opportunity for those who feel that they don't necessarily want to go through that kind of career ladder and have their career kind of either promoted or limited by somebody else, and maybe don't think that they were that suited, which was probably more my situation. It's nice to know that there is more infrastructure today for those that want to go out and start something and build something. And it's a real thing. And I think we've had, again, entrepreneurship is not new. We've had it for hundreds of years. But I think now, in and of itself, there's a whole industry around it. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned how actually you kind of fell into the role of, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a leader by ultimately developing those skills to talk to customers and engaging with people and, you know, opening marketing, big ID and such. So when you were working with the company and you guys scaled, like, how did you embrace that entrepreneurial kind of nature that you always had within yourself? How did you kind of grow into that person you are today?
Yeah, look, you know, honestly, I was a jerk in my first company. I imagine this is what entrepreneurs are supposed to be, jerks. Yeah. I'm not a jerk at my new company. I've mellowed with age. I am more jokey. I think you get a little bit more sanguine as you get older.
Yeah.
But I knew people that were successful that were jerks. You know, like, it right. happens. You know, people that are successful that are nice folks, you know, I would always recommend being a nice person versus a not a nice person. But I don't think there's a single path. And I do think you learn, right? You don't know what you know at 20, what you know at 50. Mm-hmm. And there'll come a time at 60 or 70 or 80, if I live so long, that I'll know more. But that's the thing, you know, I think in any career, you're constantly learning, right? If you are going through that kind of career ladder in a big company like a Disney or you know, I don't know why I'm thinking of like movie businesses, but like a Warner Brothers or whatever, you know, you obviously expand your horizons, you expand your responsibilities, you learn more. So I think learning is not the exclusive precinct of startup life. But like I said, if you like every day being a change, if you like, you know, I don't actually like roller coasters. I was going to say, if you like roller coasters, this is fantastic. I actually hate roller coasters. and I don't necessarily take a lot of risk outside of kind of the business world. But you know, look, it's an exciting life. And I think you don't necessarily know. And look, there's terrible times, right, where everything feels like it's falling apart when, you know, investors don't want to fund you, when customers tell you your product is awful. And then there's fantastic times, right? When you win awards, you can see some behind me, when your employees are satisfied or grateful, maybe you get an opportunity to either sell the company, maybe IPO the company. You know, today I think Instacart just IPO'd.
Yeah.
So again, it's that variability that I think it makes it exciting and on a very compressed time scale. So I think for those that like a little bit more of that chutes and ladders, if you're familiar with that game, that kind of unpredictability. And obviously you try and manage it and you try and kind of create a through line. But it's fun, you know, it's fun. Sometimes very sad and sometimes you cry, but there are good times.
Right. And I guess, you know, I've been even told this myself, you know, I'm a bit of a wild card, and I guess that's kind of relative to what you're saying. I mean, people who have these entrepreneurial visions, like, I guess we do have something, you know, of a burning fire inside of us almost. But
and I think you know, right?
Yeah.
I think you know, right? You're doing this podcast. You know,
right.
You know, like, you know where you want to be. Like, it's not
yeah.
like you're showing it already, you
yeah.
know? So I think, you know, you would probably be unhappy working in a much more structured, we had to wait 3 years for that promotion. And in, you know, your furtherance in that career is dependent on always somebody above you. And so I think, look, there's always going to be somebody, whether it's investors or customers, somebody that, but I think you feel like you have more control. And again, if you like a little bit more of that unpredictability, if I could say it right, entrepreneurship is great. And the best thing is you could fail and start again.
Yeah, you fail, start again, right? So I guess there's no such thing as a wrong time then, almost.
There isn't. And look, I think it's just really a question of when. And look, I actually think younger sometimes is better. Peter Thiel, who you guys probably know, you know, he has some special fund where he'll give somebody $100,000 not to go to university. I don't know if he does it at the Ivies and, of course, Stanford, but I do think it does go to show that there are multiple paths. And look, I think finishing a degree is fantastic. So I think, you know, for all the listeners, finish it first. It's a nice piece of insurance to have, and it's a fantastic experience as you're growing up. But I do think that you know if you're interested. Like when I was thinking about being an entrepreneur when I was in high school, maybe not in tech, but certainly I was thinking about it. Same in university, I was looking at, I was reading. And when I saw the first browser, you know, it's like saying when you saw the first dinosaur, but when I saw the first browser, like a lot of people, I said, hey, this is something special. This is something different. This is going to change the world. And I was still in school and I didn't start a company like day one, but I immersed myself in it. And the first couple of jobs were related to it. And then I just said, look, you know, I'm tired of waiting. I want to kind of jump both feet into the cold water.
Yeah, I mean, and you definitely did, right? I mean, looking at the company now.
I was in Vancouver, it's freezing.
Yeah, but I mean, just kind of the final thing to wrap things up is, you know, kind of taking a big idea and ultimately getting into, you know, unicorn status. You know, it's always a dream sometimes for entrepreneurs, and talking about how, you know, you fell in love with the process, started multiple companies before this. I mean, what would you say is kind of that final feeling of peace? I mean, of course, you know, you guys are still working, still building, but in terms of at least reaching a goal that many entrepreneurs, you know, are dreaming of reaching, what kind of final words of encouragement
do you? So I'll talk a lot. Look, I think it's hard to predict an outcome, right? I think it requires a lot of hustle, a lot of kind of commitment and dedication. You know, in the first 2 years of Big ID, I rarely left my office. I worked all weekends and, you know, I cold called for my first customers. I was by my pool in Westchester in New York. But I will say that, look, you will know, and most people will have a hunch of when the right time to go in is, right? I don't think you have to do it, you know, before you finish school, right after you finish school. But you'll know, right? You'll have that idea. You'll feel compelled, like, hey, if I don't do this now, somebody else will beat me to it. You'll have that knowledge. Or have that at least kind of impulsiveness. And I think that's great. And again, it could happen in different parts of your life. And I do think when you're in it, so long as you're committed to A, you know, build a plan, but also kind of do what it takes, right? Getting your first customer is hard, but not losing sight of, I got to get my first customer or my second customer, to be creative in terms of how you get those customers. And then again, like, you know, hustling, I think, you know, looking for advantage, looking for differentiation, looking for opportunity. And again, if you do it, I think it's super rewarding, right? Yes, there's a prize at the end. Some people get untold riches. Even if you don't, you know, it's not such a terrible way to go, right? Chances are you can make a healthy living off of it. And more importantly, you could at least look back and say, I tried. And that's also important when you're my age. Less your age, but my age.
Yeah. Trying.
Exactly.
And at least trying, yeah.
Leaving that risk behind. I guess the biggest, you know, best way to kind of close us off is that.
Right behind me, and maybe I'll finish off. Those are the values of Big ID. I think you can see these things right there. I think care, do, try, and shine. And I
are
think
those your values? Are those your
those
values?
Those are Big ID values, but I think they apply equally well to anybody starting a company, right?
Right.
I think So, you know, we took them as our values, the kind of 404 statements. My wife got me that, so she's very nice. Right. My 404 books that have no words inside of them. But yeah, but look, I do think that they carry people over well for whatever they endeavor to do in life. And entrepreneurship, I think, is a very noble endeavor. So I'll finish up with that.
Yeah, nice. That was amazing. And definitely love the, you know, three values out of there. It's a nice little testament.
Props. It's always important to have props on the show.
Hey, y'all. Sean here with a quick sign-off. Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Yale Founder Series. If you're a founder, entrepreneur, or world changer of any sort, be sure to check out some of our partners to accelerate your business ventures. Whether it's consultation with Adventus Law, bookkeeping and ideation with Mighty Startup, accounting or advisory with AKM Global, or even tax help with Heartbeat and Partners, YFS will continue to build and support the strong community of student founders and entrepreneurs. So make sure you tap into YFS Pod on IG and with our partners, Speaker Network, to continue to grow and accelerate your ventures. Peace.